Welcome into episode 35 of the Phoenix Suns podcast here on Bright Side of the Sun. Chris Habas, as always, here to lull you to sleep with my soothing and amazing voice. And Jim Kokenauer is here to wake you up with his alarming and disturbing voice. How are you doing today, Jim?
I'm doing good. I don't think your voice is actually all that dulcet or mellifluous, to speak frankly, from my opinion, from my stance over here. But everything is great. I think we got a lot of great topics to talk about today. It's a really active news cycle right now. Lots of Sun stuff going on.
Yeah, hashtag August on that. Everything is going on right now. It's definitely very much August. And you know what? I'd like to, before we jump into talking about, I want to mention this at the end, but I also want to briefly mention this now. Jim, you had actually gotten an email from a listener in fill in the country when you mentioned it, but we got an email from a listener in South America, from what I believe, and that's great. We appreciate that, and all the comments that we get in the podcast giving us suggestions, and whether they're terrible ideas, because, you know, you guys usually have terrible ideas, but for the most part, they're all good stuff, and definitely appreciate that. So between the emails, the comments, we appreciate the feedback. We're trying to implement everything you guys suggest that kind of fits into the context of the podcast, and I thought it was great. I mean, getting an email that came from another country saying that they're avid listeners, and, you know, here's a couple of things that they would like to see or hear, I thought that was great stuff. What about you, Jim?
Yeah, absolutely. We always appreciate all the feedback we can get from our listeners, everybody all around the world. We've got quite a following here on Brightside based off of some of our international players, based off of some people traveling outside of the United States that were born here. And so I think that gives us a really eclectic feel to the site, a lot of different opinions from different people, and that's part of what makes the Brightside great.
Yeah, I mean, in a nutshell, having a guy from Italy, I should say, not an Italian follower, but a gentleman from Italy being our 2000th Twitter follower, and getting emails from South America telling us how we can make this a little bit better of an experience in terms of the podcast to make it as best as possible, as well as the multi-bullet-pointed comment from one of our avid Brightside readers/listeners letting us know, like, the different things that they'd like to see with the podcast. We absolutely appreciate that. And 35 episodes in to this podcast, not counting all the .5s and interviews and one-offs, so we're probably more or less in the 40s, but, you know, episode 35. You know, 35 is actually a very interesting number in Phoenix Suns history. Some of the greats that have ever played the game came through and wore the number 35, from Craig Dykema to Bayard Forrest to Armen Gilyan, Joe Klein, Xavier McDaniel. Huge names. I know immediately when you think of Suns history, those are the five guys that pop up in at least most people's top 500 players that have played in the Phoenix Suns out here. The most interesting with those guys is when you look at Xavier McDaniel, he was part of the trade that sent Eddie Johnson to Seattle, so folks may not be super excited about him. But Joe Klein, for the 4 or 5 seasons or so that he gave to the Phoenix Suns, he was part of the trade that brought in Cedric Ceballos, and Armen Gilyan brought Kurt Rambis over to the Phoenix Suns. So it was a pretty interesting collection of talents there in terms of the folks that have donned the number 35 in Phoenix Suns history. And
so basically you're breaking into like some 7 degrees of separation between all these guys, the number 35s, and linking them back to all the great players that brought in here. That's what you're doing there?
Absolutely. You know, we just need to get someone. Hey, Michael Beasley, for all everyone wants to talk about Michael Beasley, change the number to 35. Let's go ahead and get a trade going. You'll bring someone back, hopefully, that can be an equivalent to a Cedric Ceballos or a Kurt Rambis.
And so what I want to know then is, which of these guys is linked to Kevin Bacon, and through who?
Which of these guys is linked to Kevin Bacon? It's got to be Eddie Johnson or Cedric Ceballos. One of those guys have had to bump into him in some capacity, right? I mean, or Kurt Rambis. He's out there in Hollywood. Ah, there we go. Kurt Rambis is in California. He's had to have bumped into at a game or something with Kevin Bacon. But the other side of 35 that I thought was actually really interesting. So there's a lot of Breaking Bad fans out here. And a shout out to one of our avid writers out there, Richard. He's a big Breaking Bad guy. We go back and forth on Twitter about this. The elemental bromine means strong smelling or stench. It's the word that it derives from. It's element number 35. That's the elemental number 35. It is a fuming red brown liquid that is corrosive and toxic and does not occur in nature. And it's also in the title of Breaking Bad, which I thought was interesting. BR is in the title, as well as BA, the elemental form of barium bromide, is a toxic substance that can cause severe poisoning if ingested. And I think for a lot of different reasons, if folks want to get metaphorical, Breaking Bad, that's almost a theme for the Phoenix Suns over the past couple of years as they're trying to get better.
And not only that, but you could also draw a parallel with that combination being toxic, foul-smelling, everything like that, to the effect that some people think that one Michael Beasley has on the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, and that's something where with Michael Beasley and the Phoenix Suns, it's pretty interesting. And let's jump into Michael Beasley and the Phoenix Suns. I like that transition there, is that we have Michael Beasley. We have all these conspiracy theorists that said that he's going to be gone on what day. We actually, with our conversation that we had, you said that it was going to be, was it Tuesday, I believe, September the 3rd was your date that you thought that it was going to happen. And I believe I just went with the first, you know, as soon as possible. We still have those days to come. That's still forthcoming here this upcoming weekend. But with Michael Beasley, it's real interesting how nothing is leaking out. Nothing is being talked about. Nothing is going on with Michael Beasley in a sense of chatter and talking and rumors and speculation. I know it's not the biggest story in the world, but at least out here in Phoenix, nothing is leaking. What do you think of this new tight-lipped regime, this new front office that's not leaking all of the nonsensical stories to the fake reporters out there, let alone the great reporters? We had a lot of Sun stuff leak under Lance Blanks, and a lot of that stuff slipped out. And now it seems like almost nothing is leaking out, and these guys are, as soon as something happens with Phoenix, it's happening right as it's happening, and that's when we find out about it.
Yeah, the previous front office with Lance Blanks as part of it, they had a lot more clandestine operations going. The one, not a parallel, but the one thing I can compare and contrast between the two was the workouts leading up to the draft. With Lance Blanks, that was shrouded in secrecy. They didn't want the media to have access to that. And so the media and the fans, secondhand off of that, as a byproduct of that, didn't get to get much information on who was in, what the team was thinking of players, and this type of information that people really want. And then with McDonough in, there was a lot more transparency there. And they had the transparency, they gave the access, and they were still able to be very cloak and dagger with what their exact intentions were going into the draft. And so that worked. And I thought that was refreshing. I really enjoyed that. I thought that that was a much better way to handle things, to endear yourself to the fan base. But now, since then, with a couple of things that happened, and Michael Beasley, first case in point, we've been getting more information from the players commenting on this, like Caron Butler just did, where he's talking about the situation, but there's deafening silence from the front office. As far as I know, they never even came out and really had even like a formal statement to where they were saying something to the effect of, we're looking into what has happened with Michael as we do our research, conduct our research, and more becomes apparent to us, then we'll be able to make decisions from that point forward as to whatever ramifications may exist. You know, the typical, we're not saying anything, but we're still saying something to you just so you can have something that we said to you. You know, substanceless babble. And that hasn't happened. And so I'm kind of wondering where that is, where that line is going to work with them, because I like the pre-draft stuff, and I don't like as much where they kind of completely close you out, because I think just like the draft, that they can keep their intentions secret, but still have a level where there's more contact and back and forth.
I don't know. I'm on the side of the fence where I, in the draft workout, so two pieces to what you just said there. First piece I'll go off of kind of quickly is that some of the trainers and the athletic staff, the folks that are, you know, going through with the workouts with the players, those guys said that, you know, based on last year versus this year with workouts, taking into account the fact that the Suns had two first round picks, but they basically worked out the same amount of people. They had the same amount of workouts, same amount of people that came through. They did their due diligence. They worked out everybody. Like Lance Blanks still went through and worked out people, and they did their due diligence getting folks to come in. But they did it from the context of only having the number 13 pick. So probably less guys came through because the Suns had three picks this year that scoped from top five to late first round to the end of the second round. So a little bit of a different scenario, but they said that they basically did the same thing this year. Not much really changed. The difference was, as you mentioned, they actually gave access to people and they let people come in.
So what you're telling me, and this is a shocking revelation, is that Anthony Davis did not work out for the Suns last year?
My gut says that they thought he'd be gone by at least that 9 to 10 pick. Like, they thought that, if New Orleans didn't take him number one, they'd at least take him with that Austin Rivers pick that they had midway through the lottery.
Okay, and that's what I was kind of trying to illustrate, was that they accomplished the same thing, although I think that if I was going McDonough to Lance Blanks, I might give the slight nod to McDonough in terms of talent evaluation skills. But they worked out the same players, they did all of that stuff, but this year the media was kind of allowed in there a little bit more. And if you can do it both ways and make it work, then why not have the fans give them this warm fuzzy type of feeling, even if you're not really giving them much at all? You're not tipping your hand, so why not, you know, try to foster that interaction and sense of unity to where they can feel like they're still part of this process?
Well, with that, so I agree with that from the draft sense, is that, okay, we're going to work these guys out. You guys aren't going to see us work them out. You have no idea what we're going to do with them other than what they tell you and what we decide to tell you. But essentially, they work them out and then let us talk to them afterwards, the players as well as the general manager and the coach. So that access was different. But on the flip side of it, I'm going to disagree with you on this one. What I'm going to ask you a question. What do the Suns gain from coming out and, I don't know, having a press conference with Ryan McDonough to talk about Michael Beasley's situation? What do the Suns and Ryan McDonough and the organization gain from doing something like that?
I don't think there's much to gain from something like that in terms of discussing it that way, but from what I was mentioning earlier, just a vanilla statement, at least, that gives you at least a little bit of something. And then at this point, it basically comes down to, is Beasley going to get waived? Is he going to be off the team for the upcoming season and sitting somewhere with his favorite green substance, collecting his paychecks? Or are the Suns actually going to keep him on the team? And if they were going to keep him on the team, then obviously they could have said something by now. So that leads you to believe that he will be gone. But the lack of anything coming from them leads me to believe the former. So it just seems like with this, it's just a little bit more shrouded secrecy. I would have thought that from a PR standpoint, they could have probably handled it a little bit differently. Because like I said, now, McDonough saying nothing, Babby saying nothing, the team saying nothing, Beasley saying nothing, but other people are all still discussing this, including his teammates.
So green substance, you're clearly talking about aloe. I know a big fad with working out is taking aloe to kind of help the process. So you're talking about Michael Beasley hanging out with some aloe. That's pretty cool. I'm glad that you're understanding that he wants to stay in shape and be in peak basketball form with that green substance. But no, I don't know. I don't see there's nothing to benefit from Michael Beasley coming out and talking about the situation, because Michael Beasley, at this point, I don't think he's in that Terrell Owens, Chad Ochocinco realm of any word that comes out of his mouth is going to get spun negatively no matter what he says. I mean, he's in that position where he's had enough things happen where he's now a perpetual marijuana user. He's a perpetual person that gets arrested or gets, you know, as put into these kind of situations. So with Michael Beasley, I don't think anything is gained from him saying anything. I don't know if Jeff Hornacek, maybe he comes out and goes, you could drop subtle hints going, hey, we want to be a high character team, and then people can run with it. You know, he can come out and say that, you know, we're only going to play the players that actually want to be here, or folks that are focused on basketball. Like, I guess a vanilla statement, like something like that, where you drop a subtle hint going, you know, we're all about character and we just want players that are here to play basketball. They're not here to do other things off the court. You can drop that one line in there that makes it go, hey, they might get away. They might get rid of Beasley. They may do something different. I get that. I don't understand how the Suns, the team, the organization, anyone really individually or collectively can benefit from coming out with anything other than just a vanilla statement. Same thing with trade deadline stuff. So with how tight-lipped they are right now on Michael Beasley, we saw the Clippers trade come and go like that. We saw the Indiana Pacers trade come and go like that with a little bit of a leak from an Argentinian publicist. So that got leaked by him, not Adrian Wojnarowski. So those all those things kind of came and went very quickly, and the draft came and went quickly. There wasn't a big thing that they were going to take Alex Len or Archie Goodwin.
To touch on what you just mentioned right there, the high character thing, that's a perfect example of the way they could handle this. You could say something along the lines of what happened, that we're still looking into the details of it. The Suns franchise wants people of high character working within this, and Michael is aware that that is the stand of this team, without saying whether he's high character or not, without saying whether he has done this, whether he's guilty of it, anything like that. You say something like that, that the team wants to bring high character people into the organization. That's the type of organization they're running, and Michael's aware of that. So I don't understand why saying something like that, just giving people something, is bad in this type of a situation instead of just the complete silence. Does that mean that the Suns are tolerant of this type of stuff? Does that mean they're not tolerant? I mean, so we still got lots of stuff up in the air. Based off of this current situation. And some of that would be easily answerable. And without saying what you're going to do, it gives the fans and the media something.
Yeah, I guess that's the other side of the coin, is silence an indictment on being wrong? Is silence an indictment on doing something negative? And that's always what people think, is that silence always alludes to something negative, where, like, as you said, with the Phoenix Suns, are they being tolerant? Are they doing anything? Are they sitting on their hands? That's what people think. So from that side of the spectrum, I get it. I understand how people can say, well, hey, Suns, release a statement, say something, do something, because if you don't, that makes us think that you're tolerant of this, or you're accepting of this, or you're, you know, sitting on your hands doing nothing with this. Like how I had a sit down with Lon Babby last year around the middle of the 7-game losing streak, and he mentioned that this was a project that they were well aware they were getting into, that was meant to be 246 games. It was meant to be three seasons. It was meant to be 346 game or 246 games. So with that being said, like, are they being just tolerant of that? Like, back then they were tolerant of bad play. Are they being tolerant of all the legal stuff too?
To touch on what you just said, that 246 game project, so that means starting of the 3 years, Lon Babby was already saying we're not going to make the playoffs the next three seasons.
Well, as you know, I think it was
on it.
Yeah, it was you and Dave that talked to Lon when we were at Media Day at the beginning of the season last year, and I believe this is paraphrasing a quote from him, I'm not quoting him exactly, but he had basically said that, you know, there's no way that they can walk into an office and tell everyone, hey, guys, try as hard as you can, but at the end of the day, we need you to lose. Like, that's his concept of tanking, is that he can't look someone in the eye and say they're going to lose. So, I mean, with your philosophy right there, they're committing to Michael Beasley, you know, 25 games into, you know, the first year of his 3-year contract. Hey, maybe they're committing to it. Maybe that's what this is all about, is that they're committed to fixing him. They're committed to being by his side. And with that being said, you know, does that equal more wins or more losses? You as an audience can translate that as much as you want.
Okay, and yeah, going into it, I had no problem with that. And Lon, I'm not sure if he said that on Media Day. He might have, in terms of the exact stuff about looking people in the eye and telling them to lose. Maybe he did. I basically, from that long conversation that we had, I think it was mostly 30 to 40 minutes of him kind of chiding me. But
you needed a good chiding. You needed a good chiding, though.
I did, because I am an antagonist and am too critical of the Suns as they wallow through one of the valleys of their existence.
Did you learn anything from Lon, though? Did he teach you a lesson? Did that ingrain it all into your being?
He talked about responsibility and trying to report facts. And actually, with some of us and the other staff, and I know Dave usually has a somewhat open dialogue with him, and he does fact check a lot of stuff through the front office and through Lon nowadays when we're trying to put out contract details, transaction details, different things like that. And so we'll go through that, and I agree in terms of the responsibility of journalists. And what was funny is Lon at that point called me a journalist, And I guess I can take that as a compliment, because it's not like I have a journalism degree or anything. But that, you know, basically we have a responsibility there, and so I can report the facts, and then he doesn't mind if I rip into the team and take my negative slant and everything like that, but he just wants to try to get the facts straight. And going back to this situation, how can we get the facts straight when there are no facts?
That was under the other regime, though, that was very willing to kind of spill the beans to an ESPN reporter that doesn't get a lot of things right. There was a lot of loose lips that were feeding a lot of information out there. But I loved it when I had a chance to not sit down, but like, you know, sit down and talk with Ryan McDonough. And you had the chance same week where you talked to Jeff Hornacek, and we had a lot of great content coming out from what those two were able to open up to us, and we appreciate that. Is that he basically said, very, very, very tongue-in-cheek, is I asked him, how does he keep the regime so quiet? How is it so tight-lipped? He said, well, when I came in, I just threatened the hell out of everybody. And he said it with a laugh, and obviously very tongue-in-cheek. But, I mean, I guarantee that as much as that was tongue-in-cheek, it was extremely serious. Whenever I try to do business with the Boston Celtics and try to communicate with them over the years, it was always either Danny's unavailable or he would talk to me and give me very, very little. It'd be, you know, if you're wrestling fans out there, he would work me. He would give me a little bit of something, give me a lot of bit of nothing. And that's how Boston was run. And that's what Ryan McDonough knows. I mean, that's where he came from. He came from a very maverick, radical, take action style that doesn't talk to the media. That they basically facilitated a Kevin Garnett trade for 3 months that leaked out the morning the trade happened. So that shows you what that organization did back then. And so keeping under wraps a Louis Scola trade is probably not as hard as keeping under wraps a massive megastar like Kevin Garnett getting traded from one team to create the first real super team of this decade. But you know, that being aside, so you mentioned responsibility, you know, with the reporting, as well as making sure that you get everything right. One thing that we're still waiting on, and by the time this podcast goes up, who knows, maybe this is already broke and we'll have news on this, but one of the players that me and you, I think we have very similar opinion on in terms of impact on the Suns and where we think he ranks in terms of how good he is in terms of being the best player on the team, arguably, Channing Frye. Very, very different situation than coming back from a knee injury, right? He's coming in with a heart condition. He's got to make sure that he's healthy. We don't want something dramatic to happen that we've seen in the past. So he's got to, you know, baby steps and walk on eggshells to come back. With Channing Frye, I mean, what is your gut feeling? A lot of the talk is that he's 110%. He's feeling great. That doesn't mean anything, though, because physically he might feel great. It's all about the ticker inside.
Well, this actually plays right into the last game we were discussing, because once again, the team has been completely quiet on this front. They haven't made any statement on a timeline, an announcement, any of this stuff. Now, Channing did. Channing tweeted stuff, so once again, you have the players revealing stuff, what's happening in the inner workings, but not the team. So I guess maybe they should direct some of their secrecy down to the players, and they can kind of chide them like Babby did with me. And I'm speaking tongue-in-cheek. Babby's mostly been pretty cordial with me, so I just like to rib him just in case he's listening. But so you have this, and Channing tweeted out, and he thought that the test results were already going to be in, and he'd have something to report. He'd know what was going on. And that was a couple days ago, and we still haven't heard anything. And I mentioned a previous article that the saying they have is that sometimes no news is good news, and I don't think this is one of those situations, because the longer this plays out, it makes me more dubious that Channing is actually going to be on the court. Not only do you have this aspect of the heart condition and the tests that were supposedly be returned that haven't been returned, all the timeline, all the secrecy, everything else, but even past that aspect, you have to look at the fact that Channing hasn't played basketball in a year. And at this point, he really needs to be getting in shape if he's going to be able to take the court at the beginning of the year and be a productive player. So every day you're losing here is another day he's not working out and trying to get back in basketball shape, because obviously he's got to be nowhere close to that to be able to participate in the training camp, stuff like that. So, you know, same type of issue there. And we all hope he's going to play, but who knows?
Yeah, and that year, actually, you can extend that a little bit further past when you consider the shoulder injury and leaving early in the 2010-2011 season, or 2011-2012, sorry. So he had left a little early in that season, was recovering from a shoulder injury, and then found out about this, and then sat out the entire year. Now the summer is basically over, and training camp's, what, around the corner? We're maybe a couple of weeks away from training camp at the most, so... This is a situation where I completely agree with you. As much as I need and my being says I have to disagree with you with what you say because you are Jim Kochenour, and we need to disagree, but this can't be overly positive. You can't sit back and not give out. Good news is something you want to throw out immediately. You either want to give it out with fanfare or you want to get it out as soon as possible. And there's really no fanfare. It's not like LeBron James is waiting back to hear from his results. It's Channing Frye on a bad team and things of that nature. So anything good that you can spoon feed to your fans is something that you need to do. You gave them jerseys and you changed the cord and you've done things like that. You drafted, you brought in a new GM, a new coach. All of that stuff eventually wears out, and you need to continue spoon feeding positive news if you want to sell tickets, if you want to keep loyal fans loyal. So I agree. If there was good news, you would think that they would want to throw that out there as soon as possible or with some kind of fanfare.
And just to further draw another parallel of what we were previously touching on between the stylistic differences and similarities between the regimes, I specifically remember from when they made the announcement and had the press conference with Channing when the heart condition was revealed, that something that had struck me as odd from the audio was that at first, when they asked him how long he had known about the condition leading up to that press conference, he said a week or two. And that seemed odd because wouldn't he know exactly what day? I mean, that's kind of important news. I mean, that's life-shattering type of news. It's not like, what did you eat for dinner last night or last Tuesday? So you'd think he would know exactly. So he's given this kind of vague timeline. And then later, another question they asked him was related to something else, but he said that he hadn't been doing anything physical, any basketball-related activities for 3 weeks. So if you found out 1 or 2 weeks and you don't know that timeline, then how come you haven't been working out for 3 weeks? And so not to say that, you know, he's not, you know, misspeaking or, you know, to say that there something nefarious, underhanded is going on. It just didn't quite seem right. And so now with this, and some of the stuff there to where it seemed like they were hiding the news there, the bad news. And like you're saying, you want to jump out with the positive news, but you're hiding the bad news. It seemed to me they were hiding the bad news, and I can't prove that. But now it seems maybe they're doing the same thing, hiding the bad news and trying to recreate that same type of, you know, negative feeling I had in terms of this aspect of the front office from the previous management.
Yeah, and that's the tough thing is that we have two subject matters. They ironically kind of tie together a little bit in terms of front office, tight-lipped, and the way things are run. I completely agree with that style, but I agree with that style leading up to the trade deadline and for acquisitions and who you're going to draft and yada yada, that type of transactions. But the tight-lipped front office, it sounds like it doesn't really play as well when you're talking about the health of one of your players and the locker room camaraderie and cohesion and character of the overall team. I mean, it doesn't play the same. You have to be able to come out there and make a statement, whether it's definitive or vague, vanilla or, you know, abstract about Michael Beasley. And you also, on the same hand, this news dragging it out like this with Channing Frye, it doesn't feel right. And as much as, like, we all want Channing Frye on the court, I genuinely feel, looking at this collection on the roster, that he could be the most dynamic offensive player and arguably could make the case for being one of the team leaders and, if not the best statistical player on the roster next season from an all-around perspective. You mentioned being in shape. It doesn't take 2 weeks in a training camp and then 5-6 games in the preseason to get in basketball shape. I mean, we all know that. I mean, it's not like I can just go and run a couple of miles and be ready to run a marathon. I mean, you got to be training for this for a while, and Channing has only been able to golf and play with his kids for the past year, year and a half almost because of injuries. So he's got to get himself back in basketball shape, and like I said, it doesn't play as well with these type of situations. The front office has to have some kind of vanilla or abstract. It doesn't matter, but they have to make comments on these type of topics.
Yeah, and looking what the ramifications of what this could be moving forward, the effect on the season, is that if Channing's not playing, then that means that Markieff Morris may get the lion's share of minutes at the four. And between that and the rest of whatever they can kind of scrape up from the guys that are supposed to be fours but don't really produce at that position, those guys are going to contribute practically almost nothing based off of last year, at least, unless somebody takes a big step forward. So just from that aspect, like I wrote about in a WinShares article recently, Channing gives you about four wins above replacement, the guys on the roster, and that doesn't even put into play, consider the fact of all the floor spacing he provides that can make the game easier for other people, because that's not something that's factored into the WinShares. That's something that helps other people's WinShares. So Channing, in reality, actually could provide, I would say, up to 5 to 6 wins to this team. So for the people not wanting to win, then it's just like you're torn with this team the last couple of years, because you want that high lottery pick, but you want Channing to be healthy and play basketball, and those don't coincide.
Yeah, yeah, it's almost like the things that we're talking about here. If you're a fan of losing at all costs to have a high lottery pick, and believe me, this is at all costs. There's no other way to describe it. Then you want the organization to be tight-lipped on Michael Beasley, because that means that they're either A, trying to trade him and it's just taking a long time, or B, they're going to keep him and they're trying to figure out how to explain it. And with Channing Frye, the tight-lip probably ends up meaning negative news. So in terms of wins and losses, those are both, you know, checked off in the column of losing more games, but it's at the at-all-cost method. And you don't want to lose at all costs when it comes to Channing Frye's health and locker room cohesion. I mean, those are two things in character overall of the team and the perception of the team. You know, that those are two things that you don't want to risk when it comes to wins and losses. I mean, if it's you're losing games because you can't score enough points, you know, that's fine. If you're losing games because your defense is just a matador, that's another thing. This is a little bit of a different situation, and it's, yeah, I mean, just a little bit of a negative vibe, and just kind of, I kind of agree with you on most counts there. I think you want the organization to be a little bit more open in general. I think I'm okay with them being a little bit more tight-lipped in general. On these two particular situations, I think that they should probably open up a little bit.
I think they should. Obviously, that's what I've been expounding upon in the podcast, but it just struck me a thought while we're talking about this. Are Channing Frye and Michael Beasley the two most exact opposite players on the Suns roster?
You know what? If Jared Dudley was on the roster still, I would say he's the best example of that, but I think Channing Frye at this point is the best example of that, probably.
Okay, and so, you know, that's why we care about this news. Not only that, the fact that, you know, any person, we wouldn't want something like this to happen to. We don't want this to, you know, a burden on them, but especially with Channing, I think for the most part, I know that Goran's probably got a little bit stronger of a fan following, but I think actually probably most people would agree that Frye is actually like the nicest guy on this team, that he has the most character in terms of that. He still has all kinds of people flying from U of A. We saw people checking in on him from the Blazers from his time there, and everybody thinks the world of him there. So I don't think you'll really find too many people that have anything to say negatively about Channing.
Yeah, some ASU fans might, but that's probably about it. Yeah, I mean, it's some doom and gloom with the conversation there, but, I mean, definitely open it up in the chat room. I mean, do you guys want to see a more vocal organization, or, you know, not just these kind of situations, but, you know, these kind of situations and in general, do you like more vocal, or do you prefer more of a tight-lipped organization that can kind of keep things under wraps and be able to make the moves that they want to make without media influence and things of that nature? So, you know, Channing Frye's status, we're, again, could be revealed before this podcast goes up. We'll see what happens, but hopefully we get some good news on him going forward, for obviously for his family and for his health. And that's pretty much it for me, Jim. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you always have some wise sage wisdom, if that's what we want to call it. But what do you want to leave the Brightsiders with here today?
So from what we were talking about, and I just mentioned the, you know, diametric nature of that Frye-Beasley type of dynamic, I want Channing Frye on the court this season, and I want Michael Beasley off the team. And if the opposite of this unfurls, I think it'll definitely kill some of the positive momentum from this offseason. At least for me, it will. And even just saying that right now, I think carries the portentous tone that has permeated the team ever since Ron Artest tipped in Kobe's miss. So I really hope that that is not the case.
Yeah, that was on NBA TV recently, and I don't think people were that kind of spurring the Twitterverse in terms of Arizona fans out there. But yeah, I mean, the Phoenix Suns, barium bromide, are they basically Breaking Bad this year? Are they that toxic solution that can cause severe poisoning if ingested? Well, Suns fans are going to find out. You know, are they toxic element number 35? But that's a wrap. You know, I think we got some exciting things coming up, Jim, and I don't want to spoil it too much, but I think we got some exciting things coming up for future podcasts, you know, leading up to the preseason as well as in the preseason. I think we got some pretty cool stuff coming, and I think the fans are going to be really excited about this. I think we're going to do some big things here with this podcast going forward.
Absolutely. Yep. We're working with that feedback. We're going to make the changes that we can to improve. We're looking to improve. We're going to put the time in. We're going to run. We're going to lift the weights. We're going to take shots until our fingers bleed. Just like I'm sure Kendall Marshall and Marquise Morris are doing right now as we speak. And this is going to be streamlined and even better as we move forward.
As Jim has seen the entire time during this podcast, it's all about getting stronger in the background of my very taupe and generic office that I have in here with a single Rocky One poster.
Absolutely, but it's kind of a minimalist type of backdrop you have there. And I think it works for you.
I think things are going to change very soon. This office is going to get some spunk going. But that's it for Jim Kochenour. This is Chris Habas, Bright Side of the Sun podcast, episode 35. Appreciate the listen. Jump on Twitter. Jump on brightsideofthesun.com. Share with a friend. And we'll be back at you guys next week with more Phoenix Suns podcasts.